We're 1 minute.
What town are you
Log
in?
Talk Radio.
Yeah,
New
okay.
Orleans.
Ah.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Today, we're going to be talking about children and healthcare and nutrition, and if you have kids, don't you love when they always say to you, they say, oh my goodness, I can't get my kids to be able to eat better. I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. You know, it's time for parents to start standing up and being able to say, my child's nutrition is my responsibility. And this is what we're going to be talking about today. My guest today is Dr. Dolev Gilmore. He is the author of Nutrition and Your Child's Soul. And it's an easy-to-follow approach that keeps children healthy and helps other children recover. Really, the most important thing, this is an absolutely fabulous book, but you have to pick out what's important, and you have to take that little piece and put it into action. Everybody can think about saying, my child, oh, I know they need to eat better and do one on Sunday when you're home. But the rest of the 6 days goes to pot because you're in the car all the time. You need to make a conscious effort to create healthy habits. And Dr. Gilmore, he is a naturopath, and he's an expert on biochemical pathways in the body and how nutrition influences the workings in our body. So this is the person to ask the questions. You know, it's really interesting. You know, there was a local hospital, and they had a recipe up with their newsletter, and it was for diabetics, and it was about making this, I don't know, something in a pan. But they had the recipe, and it stood out to me that they said put in 30 packets of sweet and low. It was like, are you really kidding me? I don't understand that. We're complaining as health care providers that even 1 to 2 packs a day is not so hot, and you're going to be putting 30 packets of this stuff in, and also it had a recipe to put in lard and margarine. I don't know about you, but I haven't seen lard or margarine in my house in probably 30, 40 years, and I'll be 60, and I really have never even had it around, except for maybe when you go to grandparents or something, they're still in that old mindset. So really, it's important to stand up and notice what is nutrition for your child's soul. And Dr. Dolev will be telling us about what that child's soul means. So Dr. Dolev, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
And don't you think that you really have to put into action, stand up as parents, as I've said, because, you know, this sitting back and saying, I love when parents do this, you know, when they're with their friends, they'll pull out the healthy food, and then on the way home, the kids say they're hungry, and they stop, you know, wherever. And it just seems to be we're becoming parents of hypocrites, more or less, and we're not really getting what the children need. What do you think?
Well, we think that we're – I think that the problem is more with the parents than the children. Like, the parents think, oh, the children only will eat the junk food and they have to give it to them, or they're going to feel deprived, and then they're going to go to parties, and they're going to have, you know, strange food and things like that. And I think really the problem is with the parents, because I've seen children eat very healthy stuff. You know, my I watched as my 3-year-old grandson was taking handfuls of pomegranate seeds and shoving them in. And, you know, there's lecithin granules, which are little globules of lecithin. And I taught my grandchildren that that's brain food. So they ask for the brain food. They like brains. You know, I think it's a good idea. you know, you take a kid and you show him, like, a tomato and a carrot, and you talk about the colors, like the natural colors of how beautiful they are, and you don't have to put this into a package with all kinds of silly caricatures on it with colors to attract the kids. I mean, you talk to them about the colors of nature, which contain the health. I mean, it's gorgeous. You look at a plate full of vegetables. They're gorgeous colors. And if you point that out to the kid and you eat them yourselves, and when they're sitting in there playing, and you just take a plate, you don't even have to say anything. You take a plate and you put it next to them when they're playing or when they're sitting and doing their homework. You take, you know, you cut up some red peppers and green peppers and carrots and tomatoes and some cucumber or any other vegetable. You just don't even say anything. You leave it by their side, and you find, you come back later, they've been munching on it.
And you know what I found is that I have four kids of my own that are in their 30s, but I also look at some other young children now. And the parents say, oh, my goodness, the baby couldn't wait to get one of my French fries. And it's like,
yeah,
really? You know, they wait till they get their one or two teeth in, and they're ripping apart the French fries to give the kids when they barely even have any teeth in their head, and they've, oh, because they have to have it. And what?
Well, they could at least be baked instead of
right.
fried.
Well, of course, they're always gone from the fast food place. That's always where they're from. But what
right.
I always say to the parents, too, is, I mean, well, if you're eating that way, of course your child's going to be eating that way because you're going to make no effort to believe that your body is dependent upon nutrition. And that's so hard of a concept for parents to say, well, I'm an adult. I can do what I want. Well, sure you are. You can do what you want. But you're also sitting there eating this stuff, and your child, you're expecting them to do what you tell them. That's almost like a control mechanism.
Do as I say,
you know,
not as I do. Yeah,
right.
Right.
It's almost like they're sitting there shaking their finger at them, you know, and it's a control mechanism. And then kids learn control really early about what they can and can't do. And when they get to be an adult, they're going to eat what they want too. So where does that paradigm, you know, in generations even get broken?
Uh-huh.
You know, and what I found is that, you know, my kids, they would grow, we lived in the Northeast, they would grow the food out the back, and hey, if you're hungry, I don't know what to tell you, there's a whole garden back there, go find something. And they
right,
would.
That's great. There's nothing like having a garden. Even if you live on the 10th floor, you could have a box on the windowsill with a tomato plant growing it or some herbs. You know, you have to connect the kids to nature. You know, that's so important.
And they're worried more about, you know, the electronic stuff than they are about doing anything outside. And you know, I know, I understand, you know, parents are really rushed these days. But, I mean, nutrition in your child's soul is the title of your book. And how do you connect those two to make parents say, whoa, I need to stop and look at this?
Well, when I talk about soul, I'm really not referring to, like, on a spiritual level. It's also spiritual, but I'm referring, like, to the mind and the heart and the emotions. You know, nutrition touches the deepest parts of us. Nutrition affects the way we think and the way we feel. You know, I've seen, you know, I'll tell you one sort of a sad story, but one of the inspirations from this book was when, I think I mentioned this last interview, when a young man dragged off. He was in some kind of institution, and he was on leave. And he just dragged a girl, a 16-year-old kid, dragged a 15-year-old girl off into the bushes and raped her and killed her. And then when they asked him why, he goes, "I don't know." You know, and that's the thing of the brain being. I don't think it's just a normal thing. I mean, all these the shootings in the schools and all these crazy things that go on, every single one of them is suffering from malnutrition on one hand and from drugs on the other hand, from psychiatric drugs on the other hand, where their mind is gone. I mean, they're just gone. You cannot support a mind healthy without proper nourishment. The brain is just another organ, just like the heart and the liver. And everybody knows that an organ cannot function properly without proper nutrition. You know, the soul is something deeper than that. You know, the soul, the soul is filtered through the brain. But if the brain is all cloudy, the inner soul of a child who's the purity that they were born with, just simply cannot shine through.
I think sometimes we still get into the thought that the brain is part of a psychiatrist or a psychologist's job, has nothing to do with what you put in your mouth, and has nothing to do with how the rest of your body functions. And really, the paradigm that you're saying is that is all connected. And I know myself, I don't see how it can be disconnected, but a lot of people do see that that is disconnected. I mean, I live in New Orleans, and there was just a report on the news yesterday that said about we are all still suffering from PTSD from Hurricane Katrina, and the doctors got on and they said, well, yes, we are, but now the people are just now coming into my office for their medication. And it's like, whoa, you know? Every single time you turn around, it's, okay, if you fit 1 through 10, you're getting this. You know, period. There's no other way.
It's too bad people could have come and gotten these mind-altering drugs a lot sooner.
Crazy. And then they wonder why the heart attack rate is so high and the suicide rate, you know, and the alcohol abuse is beyond belief. It's because they haven't dealt with, you know, given their bodies better nutrition, they haven't dealt with, you know, working on their emotional or their soul or their spirit, and they haven't even looked at anything else other than gotta grow, gotta go, gotta go, gotta keep going, and they keep shoving this stuff in to stop their feelings.
Look,
you know?
There is also post-traumatic stress syndrome. People do suffer, from traumas, but
mm-hmm.
the solution is not, I don't think the solution for most cases is to take a drug. You know, it's lifestyle factors, it's proper nutrition, it's exercise, it's dealing with stress, it's improving relationships. The whole gamut of human experience has to be dealt with in something like that.
And, you know, let's look at like ADHD or autism or, you know, all of these things that happen to children with depression and psychosis and everything. Those are all factors of, why do you think a lot of autism kids now are taking nutritional supplements? It's because it's helping them. There are things in their body and their brain that just aren't up to optimum levels, and it's just vitamins and nutrition are giving it that extra boost. But yet we turn around and want
to... direct opposition to what most doctors say, that it's just not helping. You know, there's no research for it, and it's not proven, and... You know, why are millions of parents giving their kids these supplements? They're just playing games. You know, they're imagining that they're seeing improvements.
Right. And I think maybe most of the time it's because the doctors don't know or don't care or don't want to figure it out or whatever the reason is. But parents really, like you said, have to stand up. You know, this book is about learning to stand up. It's having courage to stand up and say, I know something's not right and I need to do it. I mean, I can remember my kids were young and they never sat in the seat at school. My one son used to sit in the corner reading, you know, Stephen Hawking, and he was in second grade. So what do? Do you give him a drug? Do you pull him out? What do you do?
Really?
No,
yeah,
you just move him up to the fifth grade, you know? You know?
At least you put a bar in the back, like a bar table in the back that they could stand up while they're learning, you know, something like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and to fit them into the box is because of parents' convenience or because of social convenience or because of society's convenience. Where does that go?
Yeah. You know, the whole title of my book, you know, the subtitle of the book is Don Quixote's Heart Cry. And
yes.
It's sort of a tongue-in-cheek thing. He's Don Quixote appears in the book as a theme through the whole book, and you know, he was crazy, but he was attacking windmills, and so the windmills are, you know, it's basically totally raw courage to be attacking buildings that are much bigger than you, and that's. That was in the book, the idea that I'm attacking the pharmaceutical companies and I'm attacking the food industries and all these little institutions and the medical world, you know. And, you know, on one hand, that's a very powerful thing in the book. But on the other hand, there's a whole different approach. The real approach to this is not to be fighting. Like, I have a quote I think that I put this about a month after I published the book, and I saw this quote, and it's been on my wall ever since. And it was a few years ago already. And it's Buckminster Fuller. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete.
Yes.
And this is something that's been sort of, you know, since it's there and I catch it in the corner of my eye, and it's something that's sort of dripping inside of me in the way that I work, the way that I write, the way that I think. And really, I think that we could do a lot more by simply, I'm trying to ignore the medical world now. Because, you know what, you know, like a friend of mine, another naturopath, said to me that, you know, when she got her naturopathic degree, when she was studying, like her family said to her, why don't you first become a doctor? And she said,
right.
You don't understand. I'm a doctor. This is medicine. And
yes.
That's my feeling is that as an alternative medicine, that's primary medicine. Primary medicine is fix your life. Fix your food, fix your relationships, exercise, all that kind of stuff. Then, and if you people do get ill, so then you try to treat it with natural means. If we don't succeed in helping a person, then you go to what they call complementary medicine, which would be you go for your drugs and your surgery and all that kind of stuff because we failed, you know. So then you need complementary medicine. Now it's the other way around. The first thing people do is they run to the doctors, they get their drugs. The drugs have side effects, and eventually, a lot of people give up, and then they come crawling into the clinic and saying, you know, help me, you know.
Right.
I've been taking these drugs for 15 years, and I can't get off, you know.
You know, I look at the word, you know, we talk about healthcare. We always say that acute healthcare is pretty much for the regular traditional, you know, medicine, and that chronic disease is kind of just sitting out there waiting for the pharmaceuticals, when really, why did we have to, do we keep going to the acutes and not taking care of ourselves, and the acutes end up as chronic? So really, have we done anything? We've really done nothing. All we've done is progressed along, you know, a paradigm that got us worse and worse. And I mean, with children, if you're really setting them up with medications and drugs now in their younger years, where is that going to go for it when their 20s and 30s are having children of their own? I'm not quite sure how that's going to play out in maybe the next 2 or 3 decades. And I know you know a lot about biochemical pathways, so I'm sure you must see that that's like really altering a lot of things in our body and our DNA.
Yeah, we don't know the ramifications of taking these drugs for a long period of time. You know, just the truth is, look, people live longer today than ever before, but I don't think that's because of drugs. I think that's just because of, you know, better refrigeration and sanitation and whatever other reason.
Right.
I don't think, you know, okay, a couple of years they tack on by giving a lot of drugs and you know, a lot of people, you know, survive in it with a terrible lifestyle for a few years, so that extends the lifespan. But you know, I have to get back to you know, health, really health. You know, and something I wanted to say, Jeanette, is, you know, when they say that, well, vitamins aren't proven and all this, when you talk about proven, you're instantly, look, if I throw a ball up in the air and it comes down, I see what happens. And if I give vitamin C to 30 people and they stop having colds, so that's not considered scientific proof. It's an observational thing, but I see it and it's very clear. And you know, we've been very influenced by the medical model that has to be proven according to randomized controlled trials, which is very good and necessary for drugs, which is so dangerous that you have to really make sure they're okay. Even
right.
With all those tests, you know, they take things off the market when they discovered it's killed 20,000 people. But I think that it's very important to see the drug companies. I don't blame the drug companies for not properly testing vitamins. That's a society thing that we should do. We really should have much more effort to see exactly the power of vitamins and minerals and natural substances. But you can't expect the drug companies to. That's not their fault. They're in business. That's their primary thing. They have to make profits for their shareholders. And we can't expect them to be researching things they can't make money. But, okay, let them do their thing. And there are some drugs that save lives. I think they're very, very overused. Almost all drugs are extremely overused. But that's their marketing thing. We have to learn to see what's marketing and what's real. And it's very difficult. It's very difficult, you know, if you see when you open the cover of the book, right, what does it say there?
Mm-hmm.
Truth is not decided by majority vote. And it's very, very hard to uncover the truth.
And
especially
I think
companies, too, that we kind of have
to educate yourself, don't you think, if you're a parent or anything? Because it's just about making wiser choices, and that's really what you've been saying all along. Even when you talk about in your other book, Free the Vitamins, and also when you talk about this nutrition in your child's soul, it's about learning. We need to learn more. We need to pay attention more. We need to be able to take care of ourselves more. You know, I think we gave up our control of our health care in the 70s and 80s and 90s. We felt that doctors were more educated than us. They knew more. So we kind of gave our power over to some force of a god, and now we decided that, hey, that's not really what that is. You know, the Internet's out there. I can find it out just as well.
The Internet is really making problems for doctors. They can no longer expect people to just accept what they say without questioning it. That's big.
Yeah, there's nothing to,
well,
they can't
hide behind
it.
You can't believe everything you read on the Internet. It's true you can't believe everything
mm-hmm.
you read on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all the information is there, and if you study enough, you'll start to discern what's true and what's not true, what's advertising and what's not, you know, what works and what doesn't, who to listen to, what are the good sources. There's some excellent sources of information about natural medicine today.
And I think that's what your purpose is in your work, because you wrote in your book about patients, when they leave your office, they feel better and knowing more. And I think that's the most important thing, feeling better and knowing more than when they came in. But the long-term goal is about becoming well. Right now, most people think that when you go into the doctors, you have to be well within 24 hours because of that drug. And that's not what you're saying. You're saying learn, you know, apply, and eventually you will, correct?
Yeah, it's not mechanics. It's farming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything you do to yourself, you know, if you're gonna just change from, you know, whatever, white bread to whole wheat bread or spelt bread or something healthier, that's not gonna immediately make you healthier. But that, along with drinking water instead of Coca-Cola, I shouldn't say the brand name, instead of dirty water with fizz, and you know, you use a little bit less sugar and eat a little bit more vegetables, all these kinds of things. You decide, okay, I'm going to walk a little bit, you know, 15 minutes today instead of 10, and instead of taking the elevator up two flights, I'm going to just walk up two flights, and all these things, you know, a million different things that you're doing. You know, when I get stressed out, I'm going to learn to take a deep breath. You know, when the guy's honking behind me to pass me in the street, you know, I'm just going to smile instead of, you know, giving some kind of gesture at him and getting angry. And a million things. Every single minute we have choices to make about being healthy and happy or not. And we cultivate, you cultivate, and it improves life, having a better attitude, dedicating ourselves to opening up the, you know, the crystal that's inside of us.
And so let's talk about now about malnutrition and nutrition. I have seen malnutrition. I can remember when my kids were younger. There used to be, they would say, watch the bellies of the children. They're protruding and they're large, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. And that would be the only thing I would ever hear them say about nutrition, about watching. And in your book, we always you're talking about, you know, eating from nature's plane, you know, of nature's table, what's in front of you. So let's talk about nutrition and nutrient density. I've always spoken to people about, you know, what does nutrition density even mean? You know, they're like, well, he's got a hamburger with a bun in it and, you know, a slice of iceberg lettuce and a piece of that green tomato. And it's like that. Oh, and there's mayonnaise on there for his fat. And it's like, oh, Lord, have mercy, you know.
It's a very simple concept. It's how much food you're getting along with, how much nutrients you're getting along with the calories. Like if you take like two teaspoons of sugar, you're consuming 40 calories, but you're getting absolutely no nutrition besides that. If you're eating an egg, so then half an egg, you'll maybe be getting the same number of calories, but you'll be getting all kinds of healthy fats and proteins and vitamins and minerals. And the same thing with, you know, a piece of fruit. You'll be, anything you're going to eat is going to have more nutrient density. So if you could have a 2,000 calorie a day diet, and if it's empty calories, you're going to be having malnutrition. And if you have healthy food, you're going to have nutrition. You know, the chapter 3 of the book is called The Two Faces of Malnutrition. Because what you're talking about with the bellies protruding, that's malnutrition of the poor. That's malnutrition where you're lacking the basic building blocks of the body, which are fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. But you could be having enough of as much of that, like in the modern world, you could be having lots and lots of fats and proteins and carbohydrates, but it could be missing all the micronutrients, the vitamins and the minerals and the phytochemicals, all the little things that are improving and necessary for our biochemical processes and therefore for the health of our bodies and our souls. And so that I call the malnutrition of the rich, because you could have all the food in the world and still have malnutrition. And, you know, overweight and obesity, that's malnutrition, as strange as it sounds, because if you don't get all of the micronutrients that you need, then the switch that gives us satiety and stops us from eating, that switch just doesn't go down, and we're always looking. Like that's what the body is looking all the time for what it needs, and that leads to obesity.
And I think sometimes when we talk about nutrients, people don't understand. They think that, well, it's a product that's been on my shelf or it's been in a box or it looks good and it says healthy or natural on the box or the can.
Yeah.
And they think that's just fine. And that is such a misnomer because that's really just a marketing ploy at this point, right?
Yeah, everybody put it natural. You could write natural about everything. I mean, everything's natural. Mm-hmm. Mercury is natural.
Right.
We're putting natural substances into this vaccine. There's mercury, you know.
I know. And it's incredible. Yeah.
You know,
I've
heard that a lot of times you hear this expression, you know, people think that, you know, doctors will say that. You'll see this in you know, articles will say, well, people think that just because something is natural, it's healthy, but that's not natural necessarily so. And I just go, no! That's not true. Nobody thinks like that. There's not a person in the world that thinks just because it's natural, it's healthy. I mean, eat rocks. You know, that's natural. You know, nobody thinks that.
You know, or fluoride is natural, or, you know, or any of those
fluoride,
other things,
yeah.
You know?
And
you also,
fluoride.
You talk about fluoride, you talk about the trigger, you know, these other things that we're putting into our body besides nutrition. I mean, you're putting in stuff in vaccinations, you're putting in stuff with fluoride or with your environment. And can you tell us a little bit about how you think that that affects kids' health?
Well, fluoride is one of those great misconceptions. I mean, there are people that still give fluoride pills to their kids in order to, prevent tooth decay. In the book, I got permission to add a very, very special graph where it shows how tooth decay, it lists all the different countries and shows the rate of the drop in tooth decay. Like tooth decay lessened in every country, whether or not they were fluoridating the water. And it's very clear from that graph. It just jumps out immediately. You see, well, the fluoridation of the water really didn't do anything. And certainly, you know, it's possible that you know, the surface fluoride, like using a toothpaste with fluoride, which I don't recommend anyway, but using it could a little bit help with tooth decay, but not very much. But certainly, in taking it into the water supply is never preventing any tooth decay, and fluoride is actually a really strong poison, and it affects the mind, it affects the brain. Fluoride actually, in the periodic table of elements, there's a similar structure to fluoride and iodine, and iodine is necessary for thyroid function, and here we are taking fluoride because the fluoride actually blocks the iodine from binding to the hormone and making the hormone. So we're actually, fluoride is causing hypothyroidism. You know, here we are. We're giving thyroid poison in our water supply and wondering mm-hmm. why so many people are hypothyroid today. So I recommend, dear listeners, avoid fluoride toothpaste, even especially for kids. There's enough in the book. I give the figures for this. There's enough fluoride in one tube of toothpaste, God forbid, to kill a child.
Mm-hmm.
And it has warnings on it. If you swallow it too much of this, you know, go to immediately to a poison control center. That's written on the tubes. And you tell the kid, you expect a 3-year-old kid not to swallow it. It tastes good. They make it so it tastes good so that he'll like it. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to swallow it. So the kid is swallowing the fluoride. Parents are thinking that the fluoride is helping their teeth, which it's not.
You know, and I Dr. Dolev, I cringe when you talk about this topic because I've been a dental hygienist for 30 years in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I'll tell you, every single kid that came in, and even it got to be a higher practice in the 80s and 90s, about putting fluoride on kids' teeth, you do it every 6 months, these really strong treatments, and then they got to where they said, oh, well, we think you should start putting it on adults, too. Then we were putting it on adults all the time every 6 months. From these really strong treatments that were in these trays, and we would make sure that it always, we would say to the kids, oh, it's okay, just smell it. Doesn't it smell great? Do you want cotton candy, or do you want cherry syrup, or which flavor do you want? And you'd let them pick out their flavors by the smell of the stuff. But then when you put it on their teeth, all of these people, you would be sectioning it out, and then you'd say, okay, take the trays, okay, spit out what you can and swallow the rest, and you're thinking, you know, probably in one dose of that, they got enough fluoride for their entire life, and these kids were mm-hmm. giving it to them every 6 months. And the dental practice mm-hmm. still does this. So to parents, you know, that are listening, when your kids go to the dentist, they're still getting fluoride in trays on their teeth. They're still getting fluoride in the stuff to polish your teeth.
It is possible that fluoride will prevent a small amount of tooth decay. But really, tooth decay mm-hmm. comes not only from the outside, like from the sugars and
mm-hmm.
stuff. I mean, if you eat sugar, it acidifies the saliva. That's what's causing tooth decay. But also from within. There's actually these microtubules that bring the nutrients into the inside of the tooth. The tooth isn't a little stone. It's a metabolically active tissue. And
mm-hmm.
So the teeth get nourished from eating the minerals and the vitamins, especially minerals. You know, very important. One of the most classic books in nutrition is called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Dr. Weston Price, who is a dentist, actually from my hometown, Cleveland, Ohio. In the 1930s, he saw that he started work sometime around 1900, and as 1930, he had seen the rise of tooth decay and the degeneration of children's health, and that was already way back then. And he closed his clinic and went all over the world to dozens of different cultures tribes in Africa, Swiss mountain villages, fishing villages in Peru, all over the world, except for the Far East. Unfortunately, he didn't see what happened in vegetarian populations. But he noticed that the tribes, this is when Western civilization was spreading, and everywhere he would go, he would find a tribe or some group of people, like in the Inuit, which were then called Eskimos. He would find people of the same tribe living according to the traditional ways in one village, and as they got closer to the white man, like to the trading post, their health was just deteriorating. He went literally counted cavities in hundreds and hundreds of villages, and he found that he even said, you know, the more they would eat the white man's food, the worse teeth they would have.
Right.
And there are people, like he described in a Swiss village, that the kids had this sort of green coating on their teeth, but they had no tooth decay because they were getting nourished. The milk they were eating was from cows that were pasturing from the grass grown from the water from the melting glaciers, and they would grow their own rye and bake it every day fresh in the communal oven. And he described all these cultures, the way they lived, and the health and the strength, the physical characteristics and the mental strength of all these people was tremendous. That's
it's incredible.
The classic book. I summarize it in the first chapter of the book, and every time I give a lecture, I talk about that. I show faces of you know, with the strong teeth and the rotted teeth from eating, you know, sugar and canned foods with sweetener and all that. That creates the malnutrition of the rich.
And I think there was, at one time I had been speaking with this one woman, and she was getting ready to put her daughter's lunch together. And she had everything in these little tiny containers. She says, well, there's peaches, there's yogurt, there's juice, and there's cheese. And everything was all in these little packages. And that is definitely, I think, what the weight weighs on finding out more information for parents and where they could find out that information. And I think your book is great at answering this, is that those things in packages have to have preservatives. Those things in packages are not always what you think they are. While it may look like a peach sliced up, the nutrition in that, the nutrient dense factor, is almost null and void. There really isn't any at that point. And I think in your book also you say about nutrient dense and over time. You know, I think, you know, the doctors now, they'll say, oh, we'll go out and eat an apple, you don't need that vitamin. And they don't say, does that apple that person bought today have the exact amount of nutrition in it that maybe that child needs, and maybe they need it by a supplement. In other words,
yeah, look, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, is what we used to say. But now, that was written in the time when apples had more nutrition than an apple does today. There's charts here of you know, the United States Department of Agriculture comparing, I forgot what year it is, from 1914, what was it, an apple, to a 19, you know, whatever, through three different
60,
periods.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a tremendous drop in the nutrients because of the way farming is done. You know, you can't expect to have a crop which takes all the nutrients out of the soil every time it's grown, and then you put in some nitrogen fertilizer and potassium fertilizer. But, well, what about the selenium and the zinc and all the other minerals? They get depleted. There's only a certain amount of minerals in the acre. And after you grow a crop a bunch of times, you don't replace them, they're not going to be in the food. It could still grow just great. It'll grow nice and green because there's nitrogen, and it'll make a large yield. But it doesn't have the micronutrients, which really are what gives us really the basis of health. You can't live without these things. You know, you don't have all the micronutrients. All the enzyme systems in the body will not work well. And then coupled with that, you have fluoride, which slows down the thyroid. And if you slow down the thyroid, the body temperature drops a little bit. If the body temperature drops even a tiny bit, every single enzyme reaction of the millions that are going on in the body, it works a little bit slower.
Yeah.
And that causes us to be ill.
And do you believe at that point then is nutrition the only way to be able to start getting things going, or is that really when you're looking at more supplements and vitamins and things?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you dig a hole, then when you put the dirt back into the hole, it doesn't fill the hole for some reason.
Right.
It just looks like that, you know. Like, it takes a long time to develop one of these nutritional deficiencies of the rich. You know, when you're eating white sugar, the white sugar is burned to make energy. But in order to do that, it needs B vitamins. That's why it's called B complex, because all of the B vitamins are
mm-hmm.
involved in, they work together in creating energy, and it needs that process also needs zinc and magnesium and chromium, probably a few other things. And so when you're eating just the white sugar, you're making the energy. You feel it. I mean, the cellular energy turns into energy that you actually feel it, you know, for a short time. But where does it get? It absolutely cannot make energy without these vitamins and minerals. So where does it get it from? It depletes your body. So that's when you start not feeling well and diseases start happening, because you've had a long-term, now if you've had a long-term thing, you know, when a person finally gets diagnosed with something, it might take 10 or 15 or 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, when you finally get diagnosed with something that's the result of a nutritional deficiency, it certainly helps to start eating right, but you have a massive hole in your nutrition that it's really helpful to take the proper supplements to fill it. You know, you develop a deficiency over a long time. It's not enough to just start eating good. You have to also take supplements.
And don't you think with children, when you find that they're already depleted, you're really starting at a negative number? So, you know, when you say that you're going to feed your children healthy food and things, you really, if they've got ADHD or autism or depression or obesity or whatever that might be, and you feel that they are already have less of certain vitamins, you're already below the norm. So when you're supplementing, you have to come up to the norm and then be able to go a little higher for optimal levels. Isn't that what you talk about?
Yeah. Look, supplements do wonders. They really do. I mean, it can't be denied. And even with something like Down syndrome or autism or things that seem like
mm-hmm.
genetic and difficult to treat, and you know, it's very helpful.
And you know, I think I've had this happen with kids before, is that parents would say, well, you know, I know that broccoli helps, and I know we'll just use that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're looking at it, as we've said, what is the percentage to be able to get into the kids to actually make that difference? And that's really where they're at, is knowing how to do that. And in this book and with your patients, that's what you do. You look at where they're at, you know, what's going on, and being able to get them to optimal levels. You know, as you say in the book, for brain function, you need optimal levels, and you really need a little bit above that, right?
Yeah, and it's hard to know what the optimal levels are. There aren't really, I mean, you know, you have a blood test that'll give a very accurate reading on vitamin
right.
B12, on vitamin D. That's very accurate reading, and then you take a supplement, you get it to the right level. But water-soluble vitamins like vitamin C and the B vitamins,
uh-huh.
you can't really check them in the blood. It's hard to know. But the thing is with vitamins is that it's very hard to give too much. Now, there's certain contraindications. You need a professional to consult with that knows about the field. Otherwise, you could waste a lot of money, and you buy the wrong kinds of vitamins and all that. But it's really not dangerous. You know, it could be less effective, and, you know, you could overdose on, I mean, you know, like the doctor's always warning about vitamin D, you shouldn't take too much. Yeah, but, you know, too much, you could swallow the whole bottle every day for a month, and maybe it'll be dangerous, you know. But, you know, it's certainly, it's certainly safe. And the difference between drugs and vitamins is that drugs, if you take too much, you can kill yourself. They have bad side effects because they're not natural. The body doesn't know what to do with it. You can't just do one thing with a drug. The body will take it to 100 other places and cause a lot of side effects. Vitamins, they have good side effects. People ask me, well, the vitamins, does this have any side effects? I go, yeah, they're great side effects. You know, you take your vitamin B3, like a vitamin B3 is one of the standard vitamins that's given for a lot of different mental problems, for a lot of things. It's good for a lot of things. So, you know, if you're taking vitamin B3 for a mental disorder, and it might improve your skin, you know, that's a side effect.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin C has hundreds of side effects. Vitamin D has so many activities that, you know, it acts on like more than 200 genes. And magnesium is a part of like something like 300 enzymatic processes. So if you're taking vitamin D because if you're taking magnesium because you're having leg cramps, it could lower your blood pressure. And if you're lowering your blood pressure, the side effect might be that it'll relax you and make you sleep better. And those are the kind of side effects. And those things are really not dangerous. They're so safe. Vitamins are so safe. Minerals are also very safe, but there you need to be a little more cautious. Minerals, you could definitely overdose on minerals. But even there, there's plenty of leeway. Like, it's not dangerous to take, you know, let's say selenium. You could take 200 micrograms a day, and you know, it's not going to cause any problems. You know, you need to have the knowledge. The knowledge is out there. You know, it really pays to consult, not to save, $100 and to go and get once in a while some good nutritional advice, how to take supplements, what to take, you know, a naturopath will spend an hour and a half, even 2 hours with a person to talk about all the aspects of life. And, you know, whether it's a naturopath or somebody that's does Chinese medicine or you know, there's dozens of different fields, and each has its advantage. And there's what to learn. It's an educational process which is worthwhile going to.
And at the end of the book, excuse me, at the end of the book, you also say about spreading the word. And I know there's a lot of parent blogs out there right now, and they're all talking about you know, what would you do? And I find it's getting kind of aggressive for parents these days, and they're finding that it's not as easy to stand up and talk, you know, about what they're doing. Sometimes they're doing or helping their children at home, and they're just not reflecting that out to their friends because they don't like that ostracism that's going on. And it's getting pretty rampant, I think, especially when you're talking about vaccines and environment and what is really a good food and what's not, and, oh, it won't hurt you idea, you know. But if you turn around, you say your kids are on medications, you know, the parents are they're all leaning forward, you know, that whole leaning forward thing. They're going to lean in. They want to hear more. But everything else, they're just kind of lean back and – it's kind of a hard thing, but you do say in your book, you know, to buy books and, you know, share them with your friends, or you could share them with your teachers. You could even give a copy to your doctor, and I think that's really important about trying to spread the information.
Yeah, I like to give books to doctors. I give them a book and then I run.
Yeah.
Freedom Vitamins is more gentle. That's a real good book to give to doctors. Nutrition Your Child's Soul is a bit, you know, you got to give it to the doctor and then run.
But, you know, doctors have a conscience,
you know,
too,
like,
and they
Don
have kids
Quixote
with
problems.
But, you know, doctors have conscience, and they do have kids with problems, too. You know, I always say this in defense of the doctors. I always say doctors die of cancer. Doctors die of heart attacks. Doctors die of diabetes. Doctors have kids that have autism, you know. It's just everybody's probably doing the best they can most of the time. It's just you have to choose
to care. That's a great way to look at the world, and it really is true. Everybody's just trying to do the best they can.
Yeah, and as a parent, you just have to do the best you can. It's just that you don't have to all be on the same pony when it rides down the street. That's all.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Dolev, can you tell us about how to reach you and what you offer? I know you offer a lot for the listeners, and you know that if they want to contact you and your website, and you also have a lot of information on your website about this book too.
Right. Nutrition in Your Child's Soul, the best way to buy it is just go to Amazon. And my website, dolevgilmore.com, has the chapter headings and a lot of excerpts and stuff, and, you know, so you can find out more about the book there. As far as reaching me personally, I live in Israel. I do some phone consultations. A lot of times if somebody will contact me, I'll just try to refer them to somebody. You know, it's a much better person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, there's certain things that I feel like I deal with just fine over the phone, so I do that. But basically, I'm happy if people read the book and learn what they can from the book and go on from there.
Yeah, and I think that gives them a little bit more fuel or a little bit more oomph to be able to make decisions. But as we said in the beginning of this call, reading it is one thing, putting it in action is another,
yeah.
And being actually understanding it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I tell you, this is funny coming from me. I love the book. I love to pick it up and read it sometimes. I published it a few years ago. There's really nothing in there that I feel like that it needs to be changed. And I really think that it's a good start for people. You know, because it raises questions more than anything. And that's what you have to do. You know, it's like, look, we could go along with a paradigm. We can't examine everything that comes our way. So we could go along thinking in a certain way for year after year after year, and all of a sudden, whoa, you know, you hear a different opinion. And, like, I think vaccines is a great example. I hate getting into discussions about vaccines, but I always get drawn into them. But that it's an excellent example because I'm not right now taking sides. In the book, I say, you know, I come out very anti-vaccines, but I say clearly I am not bringing a balanced view here. I'm just bringing a view because if you have somebody leaning way one way, so you have to lean way the other way to get it to the middle. But with vaccines, I think it's extremely important that people are going along thinking a certain way. And people could go for 20 years thinking, yes, vaccines eliminated all of these infectious diseases. If we stop giving vaccines, then these diseases will come back. And vaccines are perfectly safe. Now, a lot of people just go along believing that, and when you read a book like mine, it's all of a sudden, whoa! graphs are showing that measles declined 95% before they gave the vaccines. Polio dropped like also 90% before they started giving the vaccines. Scarlet fever, something which they never had a vaccine for, also dropped 90%. Well, you mean the vaccines really are not responsible for wiping out these diseases. Now, whether they're helpful or not, that's a different question. Whether they're safe or not, they're safe for most people. For some people, don't. I'm convinced that vaccines are a great contribution to autism. And, you know, you might hear, well, studies have shown that there's no connection, but that's big studies. You talk to hundreds of women that have taken their children to get the vaccine shots, and a perfectly healthy 1.5 or 2-year-old child developing, learning to eat more foods, walking, will get their vaccines, will scream a high-pitched scream for 2 hours afterwards, and the next day they're already, like, becoming autistic. You know, this is clear. Mothers that have, you know, it's heartbreaking. And these mothers have taken their kids and watched them descend into autism, and then they're told it could not be from the vaccines. Now, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And this is something that every parent has to take responsibility for and study. There are solutions. I don't think that the unbridled promotion for vaccines that is justified. And it comes out of fear. It comes out of fear that these diseases will return. So therefore, we have to have this campaign and not show the other side. But once people realize that there's a choice to be made here, and it's not so clear, then you could take prevention measures. If everybody would take their child to, everybody that goes to take their child to get vaccinated should be giving the kids some vitamin C, a half of gram or a couple of grams a few days before and a few days after. That would prevent a lot of problems, because the vitamin C could deal with the poisons that are in the vaccines. And vitamin C strengthens the immune system so it doesn't get wrecked by the vaccines. So little things like that, or if there would be more of a demand to have, my son when his daughter was 2 months old, he wrote me, this is what they want to give her. There was 9 vaccines. There's the quintuple vaccine and this and that and the other. There's 9 different vaccines in a 2-year-old. Right? It's not perfectly safe. And they found a doctor, an old guy, and that was 75 years old, that was still practicing medicine. And he said, okay, look, these you don't need so much. Like today, kids don't need mumps vaccines. Yeah. My parents used to take us to get infected, because it's much safer to get it as a child. And the vaccines don't provide complete immunity. That's why I have to get booster shots. But so this doctor said, okay, look, we'll give her these 3 vaccines, but we'll give her one now, one next month, and another one the next month. You could take it in single-dose vaccines, which are less convenient for the medical establishment, but they're healthier for the kids, and that's what it's all about. Well, that was a good rant, wasn't it?
Well, also, too, the idea of having to get the 46 doses by age 6, there's a lot of those items in there that you really don't essentially need. It's just that they just keep compiling. Every year they're adding something more and more and more. I mean, parents need to look at some of the items and say, I think I'm going to opt out of this one and this one and this one. So granted, parents may still say, I still feel strongly in certain vaccines, but I don't feel that I'm strong in all of them. And that's a definite choice to make, because you are reducing that exposure. But also, too, for parents that have already gotten vaccinations or their child is in a certain predicament, the point Dr. Dolev and I are also making is that don't beat yourself up, because you can't go back and you can't change it, but you can remediate going forward. And I think that's what this whole hour was about.
Right. I'd like to make one more comment about one chapter in the book, which it was one of my favorite chapters.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the shortest chapter, called Vitamin L.
Yes.
You read that one?
Yes, I did. And that's so important. And isn't that where it's about? Yeah, about. I mean, you have to love yourself and your children and it all together. I just don't. Sometimes parents don't love themselves, so they can't even give it to their children. And, they don't, so they're not mimicking and they're not creating and they're not bringing it forth. And I think that's probably where a lot of people are stuck right now. What do you think?
Yeah, we all have work to do. This world is it's a school, really.
It is.
Yes.
And it's
so vitamin
important,
L is love, right? Love changes body chemistry as well as affecting the soul of the child. Yeah.
And, parents ought to know that, because when they're in a relationship that's a loving relationship, they ought to know that they feel better. They ought to know that they automatically lose weight. They ought to know that they make better choices. Well, why would that not give the same response to your child if you love them? Why would you not get those same scenario, right?
Right. Can I read a little bit from this chapter?
Absolutely.
Okay. Home cooking does not destroy vitamin L. In fact, by a process not quite explained by modern scientific methodology, vitamin L enters food straight from loving hearts in the kitchen. Much of this vitamin is lost when the food is refined. Although there's some vitamin L in the junk food passed out at birthday parties or given as a replacement for proper hugging, the form of vitamin L in these foods is mutant and apparently blocks the receptor sites for the real thing. Love is seeing the best in your children. You're not here to belittle them and tell them they're not good enough. The rest of the world will try to teach them this lesson. They need you to believe in them so that they'll believe in themselves. This kind of vitamin L actually improves their IQ. And I go on to tell about a study that was done that you know, you believe in your children, it's gonna help them, you know.
Yeah. And when children have some of these issues, it's very hard. The parents become hardened, you know, and sometimes overprotective, and they don't really see the child for the loving person they are. I know I was working with a family with a child that had autism, and they were they kept trying to fix them. They would bring me their buckets and their cases, and I said, "What are you really looking for?" They said, "We want a child. All these labs need to be normal." And I looked, and the poor child was just sitting there, you know, like, "You want my labs to be normal, you know?" And they weren't accepting of the child and who they were at that moment. And I think that speaks volumes for healing a child's heart in the first place and soul, and then that can go forward. You know, we forget all of that's actually a part of healing.
Yeah, look, test the kids with the, you know, banging their heads on the walls or whatever, all these things. It's just an expression of pain.
Yeah.
They're suffering. They're suffering pain, physical, mental. And there's a lot to be done. You know, vitamin L is the main thing. And besides that, just, you know, proper nourishment, proper supplements. You know, autistic kids need proper nutrition. And, you know, it's going to be very, very helpful.
Well, Dr. Dolev, I think your book was absolutely great, and I hope that the listeners and parents are able to get a copy of it. The book is Nutrition and Your Child's Soul, written by Dolev Gilmore, Dr. Gilmore. And thank you so much for being with us today. I think we really shined a lot of flashlights in the corners of people wondering. And, you know, like we said, though, you do have to read it and do it.
I'd be happy if one heart out there was open and, you know.
Absolutely.
Little by little, you know, you could only change the world drop by drop. Attacking windmills is one thing, but you know, in the end, it comes out to just, you know, affecting people. And just, you know, if you save one life, you save the world.
Thank you so much, and that is so true. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Jeanette. We'll be in touch.
Thank you very much. And to the listeners on today's show page, there is a link directly to Dr. Gilmore's website where you can find out more information about the book. There's a lot of information on the website, so please do check it out, and also the link to where you can purchase the book. It is definitely essential that if you're a parent, your children, just by pointing and going, I want it, doesn't mean that that's what they need. You're a parent and you need to decide and make these decisions. That just means that they want to experience the world around them. You just need to be the protector of that world around them and be able to put those things in place that will keep them safe from harm and be able to bring them up as well, you know, great, nourished adults. So thank you so much for being with us today. And until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a great day.